You're listening to a podcast from the Institute for Research on Poverty at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm Dave Chancellor. This podcast series is based on interviews with researchers that have given talks at IRP's weekly seminar series. For more information on these seminars or on other IRP initiatives, visit us online at irp.wisc.edu. For this podcast, I talked with Justin Sidner, a microeconomist, about how behavioral economics can help poverty research. Behavioral economics is a new field that tries to connect economic measures with insights from other areas like psychology, sociology, or even neuroscience. Here's Professor Sidner.
So the idea is that we can incorporate some insights that don't assume that people are perfectly rational, calculating beings. So everybody isn't necessarily the Mr. Spock of the world. And by bringing in those insights, we hope that we can keep the main tools of economics and ask the same sort of questions, but potentially in certain domains, get a better sense of how people are really going to behave.
Sidner says that behavioral economics has the potential to contribute to poverty research because psychology or sociology, for example, can offer insights when you're looking at populations of people or situations where there are high levels of stress, or where people might not be very familiar with a particular financial situation.
In those types of environments, which I think are very important when you're talking about poverty research, we often find that sort of the psychological influences in how people choose turn out to be quite important. And so I think when you think about poverty research, you know, the old economic paradigm would be thinking about giving people information and they take their information and their constraints in the world and they make a perfectly optimal choice. And, you know, when you come from that perspective, questions like payday lending, for instance, should we regulate the payday industry? Do we potentially want to even ban a payday loan? Is a question from the standard economic paradigm that is, you know, it's a little hard to know even why you might ask that question, because as long as we feel that people are getting decent enough information about how these products work, in general, the standard paradigm would say, well, if people are choosing them, they must be good for them. They're making good choices. They're making choices that sort of improve their overall well-being, and therefore these products must be serving a useful niche.
Sidner says that behavioral economics pushes you to ask why people might make choices that they'll later regret, or even if people might be better off if some of the choices weren't on the table. He says that there are simple ways we can look at our own daily lives to see how this could be the case.
So for instance, for me, I have a problem with potato chips. And for me, it's definitely nice if I don't have potato chips at home. My well-being is better off. Now, if I had potato chips at home, you would observe me every day choosing to eat potato chips. But I can say right now today that I'm better off not having that option. And that's not something that ever exists in sort of the standard economic paradigm. Once you start realizing psychology and economics, behavioral economics starts thinking about this idea that I may have short-run impatience and temptations that differ from my long-run best interests, even ones that I myself can identify what my long-run best interest is. And that changes the way we think about regulation and a lot of the situations people might be in. You know, do you want everyone to have access to payday loans? Do you want limitations on those? Is the type of question I think behavioral economics helps us think about in a different way.
According to Sidner, one of the key pillars of research in behavioral economics has been how people make decisions across time. But time as a variable has always been important in traditional economics. Consider questions like, do you invest in education? Do you go to college or start working right away? Or do you buy a house or keep renting? Sidner says these are classic economics decisions that depend on time. He says that one of the early insights they've picked up from psychology is that people are very inconsistent when they think about decisions for the future. So trying to account for that inconsistency can help us do a better job of thinking about how people respond to different types of options.
And in particular, it seems that the now always looms very large in decision making. So what's going on right at the moment is something people seem to care a lot about relative to all other things in the future. All of the trade-offs that might occur starting tomorrow, say, are all of a very different qualitative nature than comparing giving up something right now or doing something hard right now or getting something good right now. And that insight has led behavioral economists to think a lot about how that creates a tension between long-run desires and sort of short-run actions. And that's been very important, I think, for framing how behavioral economists think about a range of issues.
Sidner says that it's not clear yet if behavioral economics stands to make a major improvement in anti-poverty policy, but he says much of the early evidence looks promising enough to justify more work in this area. So, I asked him for an example of how this might change the way we think about policies or regulations.
The classic example that we talk about in behavioral economics is the impact that insights from behavioral economics have had on thinking about retirement savings, for instance. So the classic work is on default behavior in 401k plans. So when people have an option to choose a 401k plan and there's a default that they're going to contribute, that changes the amount of contributions people put to their 401k plans in a radical way, and in a way that suggests that that very small influence, a tiny push in one direction, has a big influence on how people are saving in one of the biggest economic questions we have. And I think that insight about how savings can be structured, which is probably most relevant not so much for the, you know, for the very poor, has clear impacts for how we think about policies for the poor. It suggests that, you know, very small nudges in one direction or another, very small reframing of the environments people make their choices in can have big impacts on the types of choices they make. And so thinking about those issues, you know, almost surely is going to be powerful in a range of domains. And so far we haven't done a lot of that thinking yet, but I think that's where we're going.
He says that behavioral economists start allowing for the idea that people's decisions might not always be in their own best interests. Decisions don't happen by themselves, but instead are influenced by a range of extraneous factors. So, he says, a person might end up regretting a decision after the fact, or perhaps even knowing that it's not the best decision as they're making it.
And as soon as you go in that direction, it really makes thinking about how to regulate, for instance, financial markets, a very tricky process. Because what it means is you have to start asking questions like, should we allow for payday loans or other sort of things where you might want to limit market sets? And that's a challenging thing because economists have always thought of more choice as a good thing. And I think to a first approximation, that's still right. But there are situations in which we need to worry that that sort of default impression of the world might not be right. And I think one of the things that's been a little bit difficult for integrating behavioral economics is that all of those questions about how do we think about whether we should have options are very challenging. It's not easy to think about that. It presents sometimes philosophical dilemmas that we don't normally have to wrestle with in economics. And so I think sometimes people want to stray, you know, shy away from even considering these ideas because they run into that challenge. And for me, I think that's probably a wrong way to go. It's that, you know, the bulk of evidence we have, so if you take things, for instance, like the 401ks and how easily we are influenced by defaults, tell us that these psychological influences really matter. And so if we bury our heads in the sand and pretend like these things don't matter when we're making our regulations, you know, that may be more comfortable, but it's almost surely missing a big part of the sort of things we should be thinking about. So, you know, I think behavioral economics is messy and sometimes uncomfortable and is hard work, but it's hard work that I think we know is worth thinking about and trying to incorporate in the types of policies and things we do.
Sidner says that incorporating behavioral economics into poverty research presents some big challenges. Yet work that mixes strong theory and a better understanding of human behavior can be an important part of the effort to address poverty and financial problems affecting low-income people. Thanks to Justin Sidner for taking the time to talk to us. You've been listening to a podcast from the Institute for Research on Poverty.